So, post-inoculation injury is a real thing. As of September 17th, we know in the United States that the CDC is reporting there are at least 726,965 reports of post-inoculation adverse events. Another synonym for adverse events are injuries. These reports include 15,386 deaths, 5,186 deaths that occurred within 48 hours of inoculation, 20,718, and excuse me, 789 people permanently disabled post-inoculation. 20,000, right? 16,057 people who are experiencing life who experienced or are still experiencing life-threatening situations. 66,642 hospitalizations. That's insanely high. That's almost a quarter of all COVID hospitalizations, and this is in roughly half the time. And 7,267 heart attacks, and there's more. I can keep going on with all the information. It's all there in Veris. What gets really concerning for me, Jonathan, is all these numbers. When you go to, when you go to some of the work done by Tom Renz and his team, and I didn't put it in here. It's on another page. I'll have to add it in here. When you go to the work that Tom Renz's team has done, an attorney here in the United States, he's filed whistleblower lawsuits in U.S. District courts. And what his whistleblowers who are submitting testimony under penalty of perjury, these people are saying, yes, I know this so well that I am willing to go to jail if you can prove that I'm lying about this, right? These people are risking everything, these whistleblowers, and God bless them for doing it, are saying very clearly that all of the data I just said, all the numbers, you can multiply by five because that's how significant the underreporting is to the vaccine adverse events reporting system. That the underreporting is so significant that you could multiply every number in the database by five relative to the experimental COVID inoculations to get a better understanding of just how extensive this is. Now, I'm going to tell you, 15,386 deaths with an experimental product in a 10-month time span has never happened before. That's already surreal. That's already enough to stop the whole program. We've never allowed a medical product to be involved in that many deaths, and certainly not 5,178 deaths within 48 hours of inoculation. We've never allowed that to happen. But now imagine that there are 5,178 deaths within 2 days of getting the shot. And now multiply that by five. That means that there's over 25,000 people have died within 2 days of getting the shot. And the reason that's an important thing is because people often say, well, correlation doesn't equal causation. Well, what would you call it if somebody died within 48 hours of getting that shot? They were otherwise healthy before and then they died. And I got a story about that in a second too. So I got the opportunity to work with someone who was showing signs, extreme signs of vaccine injury post-inoculation. I told this story on my radio show 2 weeks ago, or it might have been even just last week, I don't remember. But this story moved me because the person was not only administered an experimental COVID inoculation, they were also, Jonathan, administered, I think it was 6 other inoculations simultaneously. That the pharmacist, and this is exactly why a pharmacist should not be allowed to administer inoculations. The pharmacist felt that it was okay to give this man 6 shots. He's totally healthy, not on any medications, only on, excuse me, on one medication, and not for any kind of metabolic issues. They felt that it was okay to give him 6 shots in a single day. Six. It's unconscionable. How in the world could you? There's been no clinical trials on that many shots, and certainly there's been no clinical trial. There's definitely been no clinical trials on co-administration of the experimental COVID biologics with any other vaccine. There's been no studies on this. But because the CDC has changed their stance and says it's okay, because we know we're the vaccine experts. We know so much. It's okay. We have people around the country doing this, and they're about to do this in mass with the co-administration of the flu vaccine coming up, starting probably in October, if it hasn't already begun, right? This is wrong. You know, we need data before we can make those kind of statements. And I think that's why you had the committee for the Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices, the ACIP. I think that's why they all, by and large, I think 84% of them voted against the booster. And it didn't matter because the next day the CDC overruled them and said, yeah, we're going to do the booster anyway, right? Come on. This is insanity. This is how people get hurt. Do we have such little care and such little compassion for people that we're willing to charge forward and use people as cattle? This is ridiculous at this point. So I got to work with this person, of course, and I'm not saying this because I want to highlight that they got the experimental COVID inoculation and say that that's the cause. It's all of it together that's a problem. The entire thing is messed up. So what we did, though, with this person was we said, you know what, because he's fading, his nervous system is crashing, his balance is gone, he's fallen down a number of times, he's got muscle aches, he's got extreme fever, he's shaking. He's looking like he's in a really bad way, you know. And so I'm like, you come sometimes up into these cases as a doctor and you're like, I don't know what to do. And I told the family that I don't know what to do, but I can draw on some of the empirical evidence and we can see what happens. So the empirical evidence that I drew on was from the Salk Institute, University of California, San Diego study. And I said, let's use that. The other information that I drew on, the empirical evidence I drew on, was all of the wonderful research that has been published on autophagy, the ability of the body to self-heal based upon fasting. So I said, you know, this is such an extreme circumstance. I don't know if this is going to work. Family, again, does not want him going into the hospital under any circumstances. And I said, look, I can't guarantee that, but let's see what we can do. I'm going to watch him like a hawk, you know. So we initiated a 3-day water fast, again, educational purposes only. We initiated a 3-day water fast under supervision, intense supervision. But the thing that was unique about this water fast is instead of it just being water only, we used water with the key nutrients. We could use these nutrients, L-arginine, serrapeptase, and glutathione. We could use them because they were zero calories, so they weren't going to turn off autophagy. That's what, when you know your body's in fasting mode, you know your body's in self-healing mode when it's hungry. That's the key sign that people have to be hungry, right? You need to let yourself, I think in this day and age, be hungry every day. You need to feel hunger before you eat the next day. And that's where something like intermittent fasting as a lifestyle practice can be so effective. We actually did a whole show on this in on my radio show as well. So anybody that wants that, you can go to the America Out Loud platform. And Jonathan, I'll send you a link over so people can go and listen to these broadcasts as well.
Yeah, thanks so much. Yeah, I can, I'll pull it up while we're chatting here.
Okay. So, it's going to be under, if you click on America Out Loud and then you bring up, I can bring it up on screen. Let me help out here too. I'm like telling you how to, it's like giving somebody directions now. And they're like, dude, I got ways I can get around. outloud.com. So you go to americaoutloud.com. I don't know if Ecosha is going to let me see it, you know. Don't you love this? This is in real time. You can see how something that should pop right up, them kind of trying to track and see where people are coming from. Okay. So if you go there and you go to, you can either go to shows and go to Energetic Health Radio, or you can go to our team and you can see me. I'm right there, Dr. Henry Ely. And when you click on that, it'll take you to everything. It'll take you to all of our recent podcasts. So here's that post-vaccine injury case study. I'll talk about who Simone Scott is in a second. You can see also on here some Occasionally, I have a column that I've written, the empirical evidence for preventative strategies. And so it takes you to everything on there. So if you just go to my name on America Out Loud, it'll take you to all the podcasts and you can go through that and read everything. So,
Thank you, kind sir.
yeah, for sure, for sure. So when we're looking at the post-inoculation injury with this case, what we did was a 3-day water fasting with nutrients. So we took nutrients that wouldn't turn off his autophagic response, and it was nothing short of miraculous in my opinion. We had a guy that was fading fast, go from fading fast and really, you know, there's times clinically where you're working with a patient where you're like, I'm uncertain of the outcome here. To go from that sense of I'm very uncertain about the outcome, I don't know if we're gonna have to call an ambulance and put him on it and see if somebody over there can do something, although I don't know what they would do. They might send him home, you know, based upon previous experiences, God knows. So what I ended up doing, you know, to see the transformation in just 3 days, to him go from stumbling around, falling, lot of pain, tremendous pain, sweating, muscle aches, body aches, his whole spine, he said, was just felt like it was on fire. To go from that experience to 3 days later of just using water and key nutrients, to him walking around and talking and, you know, and feeling and showing that he's coming back alive, like he's recovering. He wasn't recovered fully in 3 days, but he was recovering and it was very obvious. And then what we did was we followed it up with 11 days of nutrient therapy and good organic plant-based nutrition. And I thought we were going to have to do a second cycle of fasting, and we didn't. He was fully recovered from a very intense and very, in my opinion, life-threatening adverse event. He was fully recovered, at least, you know, from, you know, to the point where we can say there's no additional effects of the post-inoculation injury. By the end of the 14 days, he was done. You know, so it's something definitely to discuss with your medical professionals. In theory, I think right now that autophagy is that proverbial off switch for the people who've received the experimental COVID inoculations. But I want to be clear that there's no peer-reviewed studies to substantiate that at this time that I've seen out there. So it's really just working off of a theory right now, but it's a theory that we've seen play out clinically, and I've seen this now play out with 3 cases that I've worked with this process of water fasting with nutrients followed by 11 days of immune priming so that there's a complete 14-day regimen. I have had one person that I've been working with, consulting with, who did 2 14-day cycles. So a cycle would be 3 days of fasting, 11 days of nutrients plus organic plant-based nutrition. She did 2 of them, and she said she's 97, 98% recovered. You know, she just said there's a couple little small things, but it's just her nitpicking at that point. But she looks good, you know. So
Amazing.
we've seen this working with some people, and I think it's something that, again, as medical professionals, we should be discussing this kind of stuff.
Amen. Right on. That's fantastic. So it's interesting. So this woman, she did 2 cycles of the 12 days of
The 14
the
days, yeah.
14, 2 cycles of the 14 days of what you call it immune priming.
Well, what it is so it'd be what we've done, and again, educational, I gotta keep saying this, educational purposes, right?
And we're talking about what she did. See
Well,
what I
yeah, we're
mean?
talking about she did, yeah, and things like that. God, goodness, the craziness that we have. I gotta jump through hoops with my words. So first is that she did 3 days of water fasting with some nutrients, with the serrapeptase, L-arginine, glutathione only. Okay, just very minimal nutrients, but we wanted nutrients to help break down the spike protein, or at least in theory, to break down the spike protein. And then that's followed by 11 days of continuing those nutrients, but now you add in the immune priming nutrients with it. The vitamin D, vitamin C, vitamin A, zinc, all that stuff. You add all that in along with the L-arginine and the serrapeptase and everything. And she added all that in to it, along with organic plant-based nutrition. And it's that 3 plus 11 that makes a 14-day cycle. And then she did that a second time. So she followed it up because she felt like she needed to do it a second time through. And you know, and she, in working with her medical team where she was, you know, because we advised on that, and her medical team supported her on it, and thank God they did, you know, on it. But so
that's super profound. But if you could share screen again and come back here to your document, so you could break that down again and again. But I'm just helping you feel comfortable. This is what she did. We're just going in detail with what it is that she did. We're not telling people what you should do. That's
yeah.
The key.
So we've seen some significant clinical success, albeit in a very small sample size. I think we want to be, you know, very objective here, using 72 hour water fasting plus fasting nutrients. So let's go see what those fasting nutrients are. L-arginine, liposomal glutathione or N-acetylcysteine, serrapeptase, and liquid iodine. Those are the fasting nutrients. Okay.
And these are all over the counter. I mean, people can order all of these on Amazon, for example.
Yeah, they're readily available through multiple sites and points of service. Yeah.
And then it would appear unlikely that people would get a source of this that is completely toxic and doesn't work at all. Is there certain things you would look for to avoid that?
You know, I use medical grade products, so I'm pretty much using companies that I trust for things. That being said, you know, I don't want to give out what those companies are. I don't want to endorse any company or anything like that. I think you look for, you know, I think it's incumbent on every consumer now to really do their background work on companies they trust and things like that. But as far as how to vet a company for serrapeptase or liquid iodine or anything like that, you know, hopefully you wouldn't. God, how do I say this? This is something I teach students at the Energetic Health Institute on how to do. I actually have them call the company, you know, and talk to people. And to me, one of the things, if I can't get on the phone with somebody and ask them some questions, it really makes me feel like that company, I'd have some questions about them, you know, and be more reluctant to use them. But, you know, I think when you're at this point, for a lot of people, it would be, make sure you discuss this with your medical professional before you do anything, number one. And if you and your medical professional are in agreement and move forward with it, I would trust your medical professional to help you identify great sources for all this stuff. But I do think whenever we're talking about fasting, you want to work with people who know how to fast and who have practiced it before, you know, and have that medical acumen for it. Because, you know, there can be a 72 hours, in my experience, has been very, very safe. You know, the longer fasts get more concerning, but anything could happen, and it's not a good idea to in some of these uncharted territories that we're in. It's not a good idea to do things without supervision at all. You know, so that'd be my thing, and that's the point we make here, right here, Jonathan. Do not do this without medical supervision by qualified professionals. You know, I think that's very important for everybody, and especially people who've never really fasted before, you know, because there's a lot of sensations that can go on that people can misinterpret. There's a lot of sensations that people can overlook, and you really need somebody who knows what they're doing to do that. And so we're encouraging people, and this same encouragement goes out to medical professionals. If you're working with patients and you're considering this, do not attempt water fasting a patient unless clinically trained to do so. In fact, everything on this page right here on the COVID Con site is really written for medical professionals. It's not necessarily written for people. It's definitely not written for people to enact on their own, but it's not even written in that language. It's written to, like, as if we're talking to medical professionals, that we want to educate medical professionals on how they can do the best job they can do for their patients based upon what we've seen clinically over the last 20 months.
And we also recognize the diversity of circumstances. I mean, there's people around the world that are starving to death. I've been involved in many many situations of that nature. Do you want to just pull that up again? Sorry.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I would. Yeah, so people's accessibility to certain things, we understand all these facts, but we're just sharing information. We're sharing what these people did. We're giving all necessary disclaimers, and then we're sharing the research behind things such as fasting, and the effectiveness. And so I think that some of the aspects that, yeah, people have their research ways in which they do things, like reading reviews and. Yeah, look, there's things like this that can be very helpful, and then so using the L-arginine, which is 1,000 milligrams twice a day, and then liposomal glutathione, which is 250 milligrams per day, and serrapeptase, which is 80,000 SPU, which would. I mean, is this in a like a 60 capsule bottle and
It depends on, again, it depends on the company, and people should be really going. These are things that that we've used clinically with the small sample size of people that we've seen effective. But people should discuss this stuff with their
exactly.
medical professionals and adjust accordingly. These are just this is an idea of where people can begin. This wouldn't be something where I'd say this is how you should be dosing it and all that other stuff. I'm never going to say that, and I would never tell somebody to do that. Every situation is unique, and it's really incumbent upon medical professionals to do a great thorough health history, understand mechanism of actions for all of these things, especially fasting, and before utilizing it, have some experience with it personally and clinically, before they do it. And I understand that that may be a very small subset of doctors who have this ability, but those are the people that I would rely on if I was a patient looking for somebody. I'd rely on somebody that knows how to fast and knows how to do that. We provided some references here. One of them's from the Valter Longo Foundation, which is Valter Longo is the research scientist out of the University of Southern California, who has done some really spectacular work on autophagy and a variety of things, neurodegenerative disease, cancer. He's shown that fasting is every bit as effective as chemotherapeutic drugs in his research, and he's gotten a lot of acclaim for it. Also included a resource,
I've
the
actually had
great.
him in my films before. I've had
Oh,
him in
nice. Yeah,
a
he seems like a really cool dude, you know.
Yeah, and I personally like I was interviewing him in the context of the hype around keto, and I actually respected a lot that he was willing to be quite different from a lot of other people in seeing the validity of a plant-based diet versus the high meat intake, keto, which, and so I agree with him. At the time, I was confused. I didn't know which was the best, and I think that he really went with the data and the long term, versus what was appearing to be a very exciting thing. But so I think, yeah,
Yeah,
at least.
the big problem to me with all the keto stuff is one, the quality of meat people are choosing to use for it. It just seems like an evolution of the Atkins diet to me in a lot of ways. But to me, the source quality for meat is very important. I think that's not something a lot of people pay attention to who are practicing that diet. And I support people exploring whatever they want to explore, with things like that. But I get concerned about that. And I get concerned about that especially because cheap meat typically has a much higher percentage of arachidonic acid in it. And it's the arachidonic acid, when mixed with saturated fats, that leads to a lot of the degenerative conditions associated with meat consumption, a lot of the cardiovascular decline, a lot of the arteriosclerosis and atherosclerosis. It's the combination of excessive levels or high levels of arachidonic acid in conjunction with saturated fats. And those are two substances that are found typically in very high quantity in low quality confined animal feedlot operation meat. So for anybody, exploring the keto diet, I would say make sure that you're adamant about your source quality of your meat. You know, free range, pasture raised, you know, humanely raised, you know, wild where possible, you know, meat, because those are the the animal tissue that's going to have less arachidonic acid and be and have more nutrient density, and we have ample studies, you know, showing all those things. It's when you're using keto, when you're going with keto and your source food is really feedlot meat, you're setting yourself up for problems.
And I think that there's some really interesting factors as well. Historically, you look at gladiators, for example, they were plant-based, which is surprising. We know this from autopsies that have been done on the bones, the specific type of paleo autopsy, and the acuteness of their minds for that battle, as barbaric as that is, was very important. And you look at you go back to Egyptian times, and they had all the same diseases as we have, from cancer to obesity, to heart disease, and the long list of those diseases. The mummies being surveyed or being studied with this same type of autopsy. So it to me is very interesting to see that during those times they wouldn't have had, I believe, at for this the low quality type of meat that we have today, but the excessive consumption of it was there. Really, the issue, and I think that that was proven true with the Blue Zone studies as well, because the Blue Zone studies with 100-year-old people, it also made sense that, you know, go back 100 years, the cattle was more natural than what we have now, but yet it was still the societies that had less meat intake that did much better, and they were intaking meat from. The maximum was once or twice a week, but many were once or twice a month, and then the only blue zone in America was actually completely vegetarian. So I think that longevity and disease resistance against disease is less to no flesh foods, but I understand that that is a religion for a lot of people in the sense of to invite people in a path like that. And I think, you know, don't make it religious and just make it about health and just make it a journey. And if you disagree with me, it's no big deal.
You know, the thing that we I encourage folks that are exploring high meat diets to do is to make sure that you're getting at least 12 grams of fiber in a day somehow, because we know that that's going to help offset some of the excess arachidonic acid, saturated fat consumption, and other toxins that are associated with meat and the metabolic breakdown of meat. I think it's also you know, very important for people who are doing those kind of diets is to understand that plant-based diets, like we alluded to earlier, plants the big part of the plant's immune system are antioxidants. So there's a great deal that you're missing in terms of augmenting your body's production of antioxidants. And so the teaching concept we have at the school called layers of protection, that we have when your diet is meant to provide an immunological protection for you, and that's where you the plant-based diet doesn't mean plant-based we say that you have to be vegan, but it means that there's that the majority of your meal, the more majority of foods that are going in your body are organic and plant-based, because when you do that, you're building a layer of protection that allows your body then to build a secondary layer of protection based upon the antioxidants that our bodies makes. A lot of people don't realize that the human body makes its own antioxidants, glutathione being one of them. And then below that, we have other layers, you know, and that's where the immune system comes in. And that, then below that, that's going to be where the adrenals and some really key glandular activity takes place. But when you are eating a diet that is high meat, if not all meat, and you're missing out on very important things like fiber and antioxidants from the plant world, then what you're essentially doing is putting a tremendous amount of burden on your own body to produce antioxidants, and you're putting a tremendous amount of burden on your own immune system to do the same. And it may be great from a biological standpoint in terms of people that want to lose weight or people that want to stay very fit and trim. It may be fantastic for that, but there is a net effect that has a potential for being negative. And I think, Jonathan, that's what you're alluding to with some of the studies that you were citing.